Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder's news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James.
I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
All right, so you might notice this episode looks and feels a little bit different than our typical episodes, and the reason is we are kind of doing a little bit of this in advance, right, James?
I mean, I thought it felt pretty similar. I mean, I pressed all pretty much the same buttons. I just didn't hit stream.
That's fair. Yeah, that's true. So just for those of you who aren't aware, I am going to be at Gen Con. So James and I are doing our recording a little bit earlier, and we wanted to make sure we got you some cool content. And so, James, what are we talking about today for our content?
Today for the content, we're talking about the Mystic, actually going into a class description about something with magic.
Ooh. Whoa, magic in my Starfinder role-playing game? Impossible.
More likely than you think.
More likely than you think. I'm actually really excited. This is the second episode in our class review series. The first one was the soldier, and that was a relatively like kind of quick go through because the soldier is he's good a soldier, you know. Yeah,
soldiers be soldered.
Right. And so like a lot of the options are like, oh, here are the feats, here's the stuff. And for Mystics, you have a bit more. We'll talk a bit about like spells and we'll talk about like magical options, that kind of thing. And I don't know if you heard, James, but I heard a couple people give us the feedback that like they wouldn't mind us hearing like, you know, weapon choices or the one I heard was like potential archetypes, which I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Most of those archetypes are like Pathfinder 2 right now. We could wait for some more of this to come out.
Yeah, I do understand, but we're kind of going for the meat in the class. Maybe we can do like a best of builds later.
The best.
Yeah, like, in general, I'm going to say a weapon that is good with the specialties is what works.
Yes, I agree. A lot of times, and especially like when we're talking about the Mystic, the weapon isn't super important. It's kind of like the spell you cast when your cantrip isn't the best weapon in your arsenal.
And with the Mystic, especially when you look at the connections, there's very few times where you care about your weapon, really.
True.
And if it's not a melee weapon. I mean, there are some exceptions, but it's not like other classes where it's like, I get to do stuff and shoot. It's like, oh, I had to shoot? Man, this is pretty rough.
Yeah, well, James, why don't we start? Let's go over like those core statistics that the Mystic has.
Sure. The Mystic themselves, give me one second just to bring up the list here. Usually, I don't have to do the fade in, or I have to do the fade in here, but I get covered on it. So, bringing it up here, your basics, 6 hit points plus con modifier. That's standard. Key attribute, wisdom. Makes sense. Kind of cleric-y, Mystic. You're trained in perception, fortitude, reflex, expert in will. You get skills, one determined by your connection, 3 plus int. You know, 4 is all right, I guess. Simple weapons, unarmed attacks, trained in light armor, trained in unarmored defense, trained in Mystic class. See, I, once again, always find it weird saying that. Also, trained in your spells. That always feels so silly to say, too.
Yeah, and this is, you have spell attack modifier and spell DC modifier. You know, did you know in the original Pathfinder second edition, like before they remastered, you used to have a separate a spell attack modifier for each class rather than one that's shared by all of them?
Huh.
Yeah, it was weird. But now that doesn't happen. Your spell attack modifier works for every magic class that you have. It's just one.
I guess I didn't think about multiclassing in that game.
Yeah, I mean, multiclassing is kind of just taking a bunch of feats, but yeah, I hear you.
Oh yeah, true. But we had so many other problems and issues, I think, when we started that game that wasn't the cause or impetus for us dropping it.
Right, yeah, and to make a connection back over to this class, the cause of the impetus and like the thing that makes you a Mystic is called your connection, right? So if we start looking at class features, kind of pulling back some of the ones that all the classes get. The Mystic has an ability called a connection. The best way to describe this is that this is the Mystic's like subclass feature, right? You know, in a soldier, you have a primary fighting style. The connection is like the mystical force of the cosmos that gives you your power. Like it can be a god, but it could also be like a metaphysical concept. Like, or you could become a conduit. Like, you know, for example, I'm a conduit of nature, right? Mm-hmm. I don't worship a god. I get my power from the circle of life, just like Rafiki in The Lion King. And then from there, you could also be, you could have a god. And there's some options here that, like, you need to worship a god in order to gain them. The James wasn't too far off when he said this is like Starfinder's cleric.
Yeah. I think your biggest thematic difference is that it is closer to an oracle, sort of, in how it worships, and you are a blitz of how you do things. You do kind of a lot of things very quickly, especially when it comes to the healing subtype. So I feel like it just plays faster.
Yeah.
In my limited experience.
Definitely. Now, one of the things that's really cool is that when you play a spellcasting class in the second edition system, you get a pool of focus points from most of these classes, right? These are points that you can spend to cast specific spells, 1 point, one spell, no leveled ranks like spell slots. It's just a very simple, easy spell system, and you can use an action to refocus and regain these spells. For the Mystic, the focus spells are granted by an ability called the Epiphanies, and your initial epiphany is something that you get from your connection just from being level one. Each connection has different options that you can choose from. So if we wanted to talk about connections really briefly, the options that are available in the core rulebook are Akashic, Elemental, Healing, Rhythm, and Shadow. If you are an Akashic Mystic, you have like a psychic connection to this other planar worldly realm called the Akashic Record, which is like a supernatural repository where all information is cataloged as it is being written or created, so to speak. So when you do something, that action, that thing you took, gets recorded in the Akashic Record. And because you have this connection, your mystic powers are really all about gaining information. You have an epiphany spell that transforms you into a font of knowledge through via an Akashic font. And as you level up, you gain the ability to call upon the record in order to answer questions. And the spells you gain give you information about the things around you. If you are an elemental mystic, then you channel the raw power of the primordial elements that create the universe. You actually get the shield block feat for free if you're an elemental mystic, which is pretty cool. If you want to use a shield, elemental is great for that because you do get that for free. Whereas the Akashic option makes you an occult spellcaster and you draw spells from the occult spell list like a bard. The elemental mystic gets to draw their powers from the primal tradition. So like they're more druidy in the spells that they can cast. And most of their abilities from their elemental weapon epiphany spells to the elemental barriers and novas to connection spells that allow you to either infuse weapons with energy or protect yourselves from elemental harm. All of your spells kind of revolve around the elements in general, not like a specific one. You're more avatar than Firebender, I guess is a good way to put it.
Now
if you're a healing mystic, your connection is to fonts of a vitality and void energy that flows through living things, that natural like font of life energy that causes things to be born and flourish and grow, and the slow entropy that causes things to die as it crumbles into the void.
The
spell list is like a crazy combination of healing spells and also massacre and false vitality and entropic abilities. So like this is very different from a healing cleric. Would you agree with that, James?
Oh yeah, 100%. Very different from a healing cleric, like a base healing cleric. Like you get the ability to strike out at things as an addition, because you do get spells, but these are kind of layered on top as well. So your spell choice is limited. So anything that you get from your bonuses really figures how your playstyle is going to end up.
Yeah. Now, if you like buffing, and I know you do, the next option is called the Rhythm Mystic, which is kind of like a Song of the Stars celestial movements mystic. You can feel the rhythm that moves through, that reverberates through creation. They call it the Song of the Spheres in the campaign setting. And everything you do is based on music. You can summon instruments. You can create motivating ringtones. You can blast things with sonic energy. Yeah, you can form like an anthem and like, an easy way to say this is that the Rhythm Mystic is kind of like the Bard in Pathfinder, but it's wisdom based, which is pretty cool. And the last option you get is called the Shadow Connection, where you kind of draw on the powers of the Netherworld, which is like Starfinder's version of the Plane of Shadows. You can sculpt shadows into different substances and attacks and abilities. This lets you create illusions, create incorporeal shadow blasts that attack people. You have the ability to cloy shadows to like basically hurt your other people by like warping shadows. If you've ever seen Jujutsu Kaisen, there's like a concept of like the shape of your soul, and then changing your soul's shape affects your body. It's very much the same. You change the shadow's shape and hurt the body through the shadow. It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Also a fair amount of movement tech in shadow.
Yeah, a lot. Very cool. Like the shadow snap ability, which is where, shadow snap lets you bring someone's shadow to you in order to do things. It's the one that, it's the like the slow spell and the stuff they get, right, for the movement.
Yeah. And also Umbral Stride, like, not that you're going to see that in most games, but.
Yeah.
It's one of the few, one of my few critiques about the connections is that the Perfect Harmony connection you get so late, I think it's like 19th, that you're really not going to see it.
Yes.
And most of them don't do stuff that's super cool.
Yeah.
Like the elemental one is like a numbers thing.
Yeah.
Like, you get resistances. Yeah, that's cool. You're one of the most powerful people in the galaxy. Akashic, you create a demiplane. I guess that's cool. It functions like a different spell that you could have taken.
Yeah. Now, I do think some of them are neat. Like, we haven't talked about the Vitality Network and what Transfer Vitality is yet, but all the harmonies play off of something that happens when you activate the core mystic ability Transfer Vitality. I like Rhythms because Rhythms is basically when I use my Vitality pool to heal people, they get to move immediately, and that can be really useful.
Yeah, that was one of the standout ones for those choices.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I definitely agree that, like, the system, especially with this class, it kind of struggles with, like, some of the cool factor of the high level, because it's like, oh, your coolness comes from your spells. It's like, yeah, but every spellcaster's coolness comes from their spells. I should get some cool things from my class, too.
Yeah, it's like, how else can I be cool? Let me be cool in a way that isn't shared.
Right, yeah. But it's funny, because the Mystic does a lot of sharing, a lot of bonding.
Mm-hmm. A ton.
Right. A ton. So one of the things you get at first level is called a mystic bond. You basically form a psychic polycule with your friends and loved ones. I think that's a fair way of calling it, right?
I mean, you could just say a friend group.
I guess.
I feel like that's maybe a little more than just a bond.
That's fair. Now, in the psychic friend group, the psychic group chat we'll go with.
There we go.
The psychic group chat you can maintain with like a relatively large number of people. You can maintain mystic bond with 10 willing creatures. And the bond lasts until a bonded creature is no longer willing to be part of the bond. So you can opt out of the group chat whenever you want.
How good I meet those notices.
The other good thing is that this clarifies that you are always considered to be within your bond and do not count towards the limit. Congratulations, you are the cell phone tower.
Yeah, which is very important because, I mean, it's based in like Pathfinder 2E, you're not your own ally, correct?
Yeah. Now, one of the things I think that's really interesting about the bond is that there's like a small two-sentence section at the end that actually adds a lot of utility to this ability. And that's this sentence. You always know the general distance and direction towards the other bonded creatures, their hit point totals, and if they're unconscious, dying, or dead. This ability doesn't work across planes, including when you travel in the Drift, and some special magical or technological effects might interfere with your ability to detect your allies. But like, one of the things that's interesting is that the Mystic Bond doesn't note a distance.
Nope.
Yeah.
The distance is on this plane.
Yes. I think that's really cool. It's one of the neatest things that this class does. Like, I think sometimes when we see classes in the second edition system, they have abilities that feel like they're hamstrung so that they can give you pieces back of them as feats. Mm-hmm. And this is like, nah, it's just wherever you want. It's good. I actually really like this.
Yeah. Ability. I think it's a good unleashing also in a setting where there's cell phones. And you get like most of that information from somebody having a cell phone.
Yeah, well, the thing that's interesting is, like, do you remember back in first edition, one of the things that, like, a lot of the developers used to tell us is that, like, if a magic ability existed, it's because technology has not made it obsolete. Like, how back then they were like, oh, we're not going to do light spells because you could just have a flashlight, which I don't like that answer. I think light spells are still useful, and I think even in a world where I have a phone in my pocket, I kind of would like to be able to snack my fingers and make a light. But one of the things that's interesting is that Mystic Bond not having a range is better than a cell phone in the setting.
Oh yeah, 110%. Yeah. And I like, you know, that. The more specific information, but like, if you were going to be cynical about it, it has to be better than a cell phone, right?
Yes. I know. I agree. Mm-hmm. Now, speaking about other things that are better than a cell phone, they have an ability called the Vitality Network. Yes. The Vitality Network is like a network of life energy that connects the people in your bond, and you can use that energy to heal people. The Vitality Network has a capacity of hit points, which is equal to 6 plus 4 hit points per level you have. So at first level, you have 10. It goes up by another 4 at second level to 14, so on and so forth. You also gain an ability called Transfer Vitality that we've mentioned before that lets you take hit points out of the pool and heal yourself or your allies with those hit points. Now, you regain those hit points at the start of each turn during combat anytime you gain action, or anytime you regain actions, essentially. You get the Vitality Network will gain 4 hit points each time. And as your spell DC improves, the number of hit points you get goes up. Eventually, it gets to 6 when you are master in Mystic Spell DC, and it gets 8 hit points when you're legendary. And anytime you refocus, your Vitality Network fully reheals. So this is an infinite way to heal.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. It's an infinite healing tool, which I like that.
Yeah. It does beg into the idea of, if there is not something significant, then certain abilities might not work, but I feel like that's kind of silly.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's nice is that you can just spend 10 minutes to regain all of your points and not worry about it.
Yeah.
And since it's part of the refocus action, you're also regaining all your focus points. So like, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Now, the action just says you can transfer 10 hit points from your Vitality Network into yourself, into a bonded creature, or yourself. A bonded creature has to be within 60 feet, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And this works on creatures with void healing as though the action had the void trait, which is helpful. That means if someone decides to play a swashbuckling Dampier, we don't have to worry about nobody in the party being able to heal them. The Mystic got it.
Yeah, I like that. Weird that would happen.
Weird. So weird.
Weird. Who would do that?
In a setting where like playing undead creatures are like a core part of this, the core setting.
The core experience, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, the one thing that's nice is that as you level up, the number of hit points that you can transfer increases. It goes up by 10 at every 5th level. So 10 at 20 at 5th level, and then up to 30 at 10th, and so on, all the way up to like 50 at 20th level.
So, and this is one action. So this this is kind of your bread and butter, in that you are a burst. You have the ability to burst heal things, and you can make that better with certain choices. But regardless of what type of Mystic you are, you can burst somebody up, which is very helpful in a game where crits kind of come very brutally and without fanfare.
Yeah. You know what? Do you remember back when we played Reign of Winter, James, in first edition Pathfinder? This reminds me of that Dreamscarred Press class that our friend Greg played, the Shaman, except like less broken.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it kind of does the same thing. Well, it does a version of the same thing.
Yeah. It does a version of the same thing, but without our friend being able to just like infinitely blast everybody for infinite healing and nothing really being a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. There's plenty of ways to challenge, but I got blasted, but,
I do remember you getting thrown down the Aeon pit.
Yeah. And there are ways to, modify this, based on what, connection you have. That's usually the thing that modifies this, but there are other feats that you can take that also modify it.
There were like certain feats, right?
Yeah, like one that makes it a where you can do it as a reaction.
Yeah.
Which can be very helpful when you're like, oh, there's gonna be a second attack. No, we need this. We need this now.
We need more healing,
more power. And
the other thing that's really cool about this feat is that, like, or the Transfer Vitality ability, it's not a feat, but Transfer Vitality doesn't have like the flourish trait. So if you want to spend all 3 of your like actions dumping all the healing out of your network, you can do that.
Yeah. I mean, in general, your network's gonna not be bigger than the amount that you can throw out at once. So you're in general kind of limited to how much you can throw at a time, but that still is a big burst. You could, depending on the power, dole it out to get benefits, because some of those transfer vitalities abilities that get modified are based on a limited number of people that you help. So
yeah,
you can do that to proc it off different people in your group.
Yeah. Now, the next thing that we can talk about is spellcasting. And I don't think we need to go super in depth, because like at this point, the second edition system is like almost 10 years old.
Oh, and, why'd you say that?
Yeah, I know. I said it and then it made me shiver. And
I'm dust.
Like, I think that like Ryan has talked about it over on the Prime show. And I think that like I'll go over it really quickly, but there you probably know the basics of how it works.
It's magic.
Yeah, it's magic. So you get a number of spells known, and for each spell known, you have a spell slot. You can spend that spell slot on basically whatever you want, right? Any of the spells you know of that level. Mm-hmm. Spells can be heightened if you know the spell at a higher level. So like if I know a healing spell at fifth level, I can cast that at any level, fifth level or lower. And it, the spell will have its effects change based on the level of spell slot I use to cast it. You have cantrips, which are spells that automatically scale as you level up. Most spells don't. And you have like it's a relatively limited number, but they tend to be very effective for things like very short bursts of battlefield utility. They have like attacks that are very similar to weapons. They're kind of like your bread and butter. These are the abilities that the game assumes you will be making heavy use of. It's like cantrips, mm-hmm. and then focus spells and then leveled spells. Mm-hmm. And your spell repertoire is where all of the spells that you've learned are stored, right? That's all the spells you can cast. It's called your repertoire. You get a spell for every spell slot you have, like I mentioned. And eventually you get the ability to have signature spells, right? A signature spell is a spell that you automatically learn it at every possible level it can be learned at. So like if I learn heal as my signature spell, then I, as soon as I gain access to fourth level spells, I gain the fourth level heal spell for free. So it, if you're gonna, when you pick your signature spells as a mystic, it's best to pick spells that scale and have like higher level versions.
Yeah. Yeah, just to make maximum utility of that. You get two first rank spells and four cantrips at level one. In addition to the spells from your connection.
Yeah, and I believe that goes up to five cantrips by level 20, and you have four spells of every level by level 20, except 10th level spells. You only have a single 10th level spell if you take a specific feat to gain that spell.
Yeah, because, you know, they're spells of myth and magic, right?
Yeah. It's cool stuff. Now, let's talk about some mystic features. Obviously, they get a whole bunch of features that give them like, oh, this is when you get an ancestry feat. These are the points where your saving throws increase. But in addition to those, they do get some like fancy features. James, do you want to talk about group chat a little before we start going into feats?
Group chat.
Yeah.
I need more definition. Is that colloquialism or is that the actual thing?
No, that's literally the name of the level 3 ability, group chat.
Oh, man, I completely skipped over that.
Oh, God, I'll do it then. No problem. Creatures in your bond, they basically expands the bond from being limited to 60 feet to 120 feet. And as long as two bonded creatures are on the same plane and are both alive, they both are aware of each other's states. So instead of it just being you aware of them, they are aware of you. So they know whether you're dying or conscious or whatever, general direction and distance, conditions. And then you also get this really cool ability called Network Spell. It's a spell shape, and spell shape is essentially a meta magic feat from first edition. It's a thing that modifies the effects of the spells that you attach it to. You basically get to, like, if the next action you use is to cast a spell with an area, range, or target, you can have that spell appear from one of your bonded allies within that 120-foot range instead of you. So, like, I can calculate the range. I can calculate my ray from my friend if they're not around a corner and they actually have line of sight and I don't, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and that goes into where you can... You still need to have line of effect to something cast it, but you can, what was the name of that one? Where you can have them cast it, but you need to have the stuff that obscures it, the subtle spells to, it's all in there. Yeah. I forgot the name of it. I read it. And as I heard the description, I'm like, oh yeah, I did read about this. This is that thing that's helpful when you have subtle spell. And otherwise it's just kind of like, sure.
Yeah. I think it's fun. I like the ability to ricochet my stuff around. I will never get tired of making my magic pop out of someone else. That's just cool.
fair. It's just like, yeah. Why am I doing this? Why am I making Greg cast Fireball? You all know it's me casting Fireball through Greg.
Yeah. Now, aside from that ability and then signature spells, which I've already mentioned, every other feature that the Mystic gets is either a skill feat or a class feat, with the exception of gaining the harmonies. You get the perfect harmony at 19th level, my apologies. And I believe you get the other, my brain is going. I don't remember when you get the first harmony. Is that just baseline? Yeah. It is just baseline.
Yeah, first one's baseline. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. That's why I'm like, oh, where is it? Yeah, so you always get the baseline harmony. You get the perfect harmony at level 19. And then also at level 19, you get the transcendence ability, which you add to 10th common 10th level rank spells of your tradition to your repertoire. You have a single 10th rank spell slot you can use to cast them using mystic spell slots. And if you want another spell, you have to take the transcended existence mystic feat to gain the second slot. You can have up to two.
Okay.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that will give you an extra slot, but it will not give you another spell. The only two level 10 spells you get are the ones you pick at that level.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's a big deal. It matters, you know, if you play to 19th and 20th level, of course.
Yeah, if you do it there, but yeah, I mean, it's important.
Yeah, so do you want to talk about some cool feats that this class gets?
Sure. I like Xeno Druid Bond. The bonds that gave you new signature spells and added spells to your list and made you become a thing were pretty cool. There's one for Elemental as well. But I just, those were neat and jumped out at me because, like, when I think of Cleric, I don't think of somebody who is polymorphing themselves into being something else. So it kind of opened up a dimension to, like, what this class can do.
I kind of like Druid better than Mystic as a concept. I think the Mystic, in a lot of ways, when they pick one of those Druidic options, it feels more Druidic than the Druid in many cases. Like, it's not perfect, mind you, but I like it.
Yeah, and they have a lot of just variety in what they can choose, because it's not just Druid and Elemental. There's like one or two others, the type of bonds that do that. And I just like that to give it more breath, because what you don't want is just the Mystic to be a different cleric.
Right. And, you know, honestly, it tracks for me with, like, just, I kind of like this option, because that makes me think of Cloud Storage. It's a level 4 feat where you basically get a hammer space that you can just put stuff in, but you're putting things in the cloud. Like the wireless cloud, but it's Mystic. It's very funny.
So it's something definitely made as a pun.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Listen. I don't know if you know this, but Dustin made this class, and like, puns are kind of his bread and butter. There's, if you read a Starfinder class, and there's like, wow, there's a lot of puns in here, and some of them are good, but some of them are just awful. That's Dustin. If there's only one pun and it's a god tier pun, Dustin probably added that pun to the class.
just as a spicy class enhancer.
Yeah.
You also have the connection feats at level 12. Basically, every one of your connections gets something that allows you to alter your how your vitality bond works.
Yeah.
Like for the rhythm connection, you convert tempo. You dance across the battlefield, stride a number of times equal to the number of actions you use. Your vitality network gains 10 hit points per stride you took, 1 to 3 actions. You can do it once per minute. Convert force of life, you sacrifice. That's through the healing connection. Covert information, that allows you to make a bunch of knowledge checks rapid fire. Or no, that's
so many.
That's a separate one. Sorry, I'm confusing them because they all the names are kind of similar.
yes.
This one gives you stuff back when you make them successfully. Convert illumination, which allows you to make people that you do vitality bonds with create magical dimness and hide in that magical dimness. And,
the dimness
and elemental connection, which allows you to regain hit points in that network based off of weapon damage that you're doing from an elemental strike.
You become Doug Dimmadome, Omer of the Diasporic Dimmadome.
The Dimmadome. Now go hide. You can hide now.
Just imagine Doug Dimmadome like floating around the diaspora with like a helmet on, but his hat's on top of like the helmet.
Just taped on. It needs to be. How else would you know?
And like he's going and then his massive hat is like hitting the ground and it's like pushing him up and then falling over. I love it. Somebody needs to make that into a character, please. I really like the attend. So this class does something that I haven't seen in a lot of spellcasting classes. Mm-hmm. The Mystic is not unique in that it has different options with different spell lists. Like this one has your choice of either occult or primal. Mm-hmm. I think there might be one that does divine, but I could be wrong. What was that?
I think healing does divine.
Yeah, I think healing does divine. Yeah. And what I like about this is that you have options. Yeah, that's even here for divine bond, which I was about to call out. Mm-hmm. And what I like here is that you have the bonds, like you mentioned, Xeno-Druid bond, Eldritch bond, divine bond. I like how they're feats that like make the tradition of magic that you have matter. That's not something I've seen in a class like the Pathfinder 2nd Edition Witch, or the Oracle is another one that gets different classes in Pathfinder 2nd Edition. This one is like, yo, yeah, it matters. Here are a couple of different feat options that you get based on your spellcasting tradition. I think that's cool.
Yeah, I feel like you could really dive into your connection if you really want to like pureblood it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But I think if I had to pick another thing that kind of excited me, I really like silly things like data bond, mm-hmm. which is an occult option where you get the ability where like you get a bunch of bonus spells from your that gets added to your spell repertoire and signature spells until your next preparations, and all of them are things that have to do with like technology, like mending or summon constructs, summon robot, instant virus. You get to pick one of them and add it to your spell repertoire and signature spells. I think that's fun. Just like, aha, yes, today is the day I know we're going to go hack the planet, so I'm going to go get the virus to hack the planet.
That is good. I like New Epiphany, where you can just take a spell a different connection.
Yo, it's good. I like the options that make me feel like I'm going wider in the class rather than taller, so I agree with that.
I like that there's options to do either.
Yeah, agreed. Because then you have stuff like Convert Elemental Essence, which is a 12th level feat for elemental connection mystics, where basically if an enemy tries to strike someone that is in your mystic bond with an attack roll that has any elemental trait, and they either fails or critically fails, mm-hmm. or you roll a success on a saving throw against such an effect, you basically steal that elemental energy and use it to recharge your mystic vitality network. This is my power now.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of words, but I think it is very thematic to what you are as an elemental mystic. Vitality Web, which is a higher one, that was a 16th level feat, allows you to learn an Epiphany spell, which allows you to sustain a spell onto two targeted creatures, or a spell that's sustained, and the target gains fast healing 8. And you get temporary hit points as well, so you get to sustain that. And then there's things like the dancing what is it called, movement connection,
yeah,
movement,
I was rhythm, rhythm, yeah, rhythm, rhythm.
The names are avoiding me. Has things that they can reduce the actions for maintaining stuff for concentrating. So you could get a lot of actions out very efficiently. Yeah, that kind of mixes well with that.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I know you are not a big fan of 20th level feats because nobody gets there ever, right?
You maybe do it once in a one-shot and then nobody knows what to do and the GM's overwhelmed, then you all just kind of die or give up, yeah.
Yeah, or you finish the game and like, all right, let's go be babies again.
Yep, pretty much. I mean, you know.
Circle of life. But... No, we're built different. It's wrong. What I like is that, so one of the two feat options you get at 20th level is that option to gain an extra 10th level spell slot. I don't know, man. Like, a 10th level spell slot is great, but I only could do that once per day with that spell slot. I kind of dig the enlightenment option better. So enlightenment requires you to have a legendary rank in your connection skill. It's a 20th level feat. Now, it takes your vitality network, and like I mentioned, that it caps out at like 50 mm-hmm. at level 20. If you take this feat, the capacity quadruples to 200, and you also regain 20 hit points at the start of each turn instead of 8. And you can bond with any number of creatures instead of 10. This is the only thing in the game that increases the number of creatures you can bond with. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would choose that 10 out of 10 times, unless there's some weird thing that I have to do, but like that,
yeah.
Enlightenment is usable and fun.
Yes, I agree. And I mean, like, I feel like once per day, a 10th level spell is fine. Like, you know, I don't need more than that.
I mean,
But hey,
there's six of them in the occult line, for instance.
yo, yeah. But hey, I was about to say, like, maybe we're wrong. You know, we've gone through the whole class. Let's talk a little bit about spells that are cool for a mystic. Now, we don't have to look at all the traditions here. We really only have to look at divine and occult and primal. So, I think that if I was going to build a mystic, like one of the things that really stands out to me is most of the time, like the spell list have like a general theme, right, James?
Yeah.
So if you are in the divine, that's mostly support in the forms of healing and damage reduction. And sometimes you get like a couple of buff spells, but Starfinder and Pathfinder Second Edition really aren't big on like the number power buff effects. Those usually get pushed into focus spells rather than these the class spells. There are exceptions, like haste and slow exist, but for the most part, you're looking at adding these spells, like these effects, like in other places. So the divine list tends to mostly be about dealing spirit damage, healing, sometimes dealing damage. It's either healing using the positive energy or the void, or doing damage to something that is damaged by those effects. So those are kind of like the big things that it has: support, damage, healing with those energy types, and like the spirit damage. Then you look at occult is a lot more like mind stuff. And because occult is like messing with the mind, there's a lot of like battlefield manipulation in terms of like making your brain be wrong, if that makes sense, right? It's a lot of bard type stuff. Like there are some buffs here. There's a lot of like mental magic. There's a lot of cool movement. You have like abilities like seek the stars. You can inspire fear into people. You can conjure a mystic armor, do logic bombs. And then the last option is primal. Primal is kind of like, it's the big DPS option. Like arcane has a lot too, because like wizards explode. But if it does energy damage of any kind, whether it's like fire or acid or electricity, those spells are all on the nature's list. And they sometimes get utility spells in the form of like nature themed utility spells, like being able to detect poison, or like fleet step, which allows you to move over difficult terrain easier, or dark vision that allows you to see through terrain. Its
Regenerate.
effect, yeah, regenerate. Its effects are really based on like natural growth, natural healing, and surviving in the wilds. It's very much themed on that, and using the environment to your advantage, and that includes exploding people with acid.
Also fly. I mean, that's on every spell list, but I'm glad to see that.
Me too. I like that. Fly's good. I like that they took the time to be like, you know what? Everybody wants to fly.
Yeah, it's like, why do we have like four different ways to fly?
Yeah. Now, if we want to talk a bit about focus spells are not like other spells where like you don't learn a focus spell as one of your like spell slot spells. You have to, a feature or feat has to tell you that you have one in order to gain it. Now, most of them are associated with specific connections for the mystic, or feats that require those connections. So we mentioned before that the Shadow Connection has a first level focus spell that you get for free for picking the connection called Shadow Snap, which is essentially an AC attack where you make a spell attack roll against somebody's AC, and you basically can do cold damage to them if you choose to attack them, or you could stalk them because you're a wonderful person if you decide to stalk somebody. And if they use a manipulate or move action, it allows you to make a range attack in response, and it does damage when they try to do those things. So you can like, ooh, I'm gonna get you when you do the thing I don't like, you know, gonna get you,
I'm gonna
and
get you.
then I'm gonna get you. But then like, there's also some really cool ones. Like the sixth level option for like their feat is called Shadow Prison, where I'm just gonna read this paragraph because I love it. It's you cause memories of the target's resentment, regret, and other negative feelings to engorge its shadow until it grows large enough to swallow them whole. You literally just feed bad vibes into the shadow until it eats them.
Yeah,
I love it.
I like that.
Yeah. The target basically, like, the more that you grow their shadow, the shadow will like make them slow if they pass, which is like, okay, cool, they're slowed. That's actually a really decent debuff. And then on a failure, they become invisible and paralyzed, cannot experience or interact with the outside world, and cannot be targeted by any other effects. And if they critically fail, they take that failure success, but instead of it lasting like a short while, it is lasts for exactly 1 minute, which is fun. I enjoy that. It's normally, I think, like a single, it's a single round normally, but if they critically fail, they're put in Shadow Baby timeout for 1 minute.
Shadow Baby timeout.
Listen, I call it like it is, James.
I like that. You go to the wall and think about what you've done.
Right. I think that overall, these feats and abilities, they kind of reflect the traditions that their connection is associated with. So like I mentioned that like a cult is really big on like mind and like manipulating the mind in order to influence what someone does. The shadow ability is just like that. You literally make it so that they can't move effectively because you've frozen them with their own self-doubts by pumping their shadow big.
Oh, but so shadow is actually divine.
Is it divine?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I thought it was a cult.
Nope. The only occult is Akashic, because I was looking up Eldritch Bond, which I enjoy.
Interesting.
Because that's one of the feat choices that you can take at first level. It lets you become a creature from beyond.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, the shadow has this, right? Nope. They're divine.
I wonder how many people were screaming that I was an idiot for talking about it being occultic. I bet you it's more than one.
Oh, when I'm here watching this live, I can't wait for people to fact check that.
Right. You're gonna have a good time.
While you're on vacation, I'm gonna send you text messages whenever somebody fact checks you.
Heck yeah, I can't wait. They're gonna be screaming at me, and I won't be able to respond or acknowledge them. But like, I hope you guys know that James set me straight.
Yeah,
straight as a gay man can be. But yes,
he doesn't get to escape.
No,
he's here with us.
No, I'm not locked in here with you. I'm locked in here with you. Yeah, but I in general, I like all of these. They're fun. I mean, what do you think about the class, James?
I enjoy it greatly. I think one of the biggest hurdles to magic users when people get into them in older editions of the game is finding out your spell list is missing like a basic function. And a lot of the basic function spells in this edition got generalized. And while you can contend that makes it a dumber game for babies, that's fine. You just find a more complicated answer to the same problem that everybody kind of hates. Like, oh, I'm a paladin and I want to fly. Well, I can't fly. What if I got a giant sapient whale and I gave it sky swim? Something I've seen happen.
I know exactly the person you're referring to.
I mean, yeah, hate the game, not the player.
True. Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I mean, like, if you're a paladin, the easy thing to do, like, just take a feat or something to get a flying mount. Like, I agree with you.
Oh,
like,
well, flying mounts are they die so quickly.
I'll take your word on that.
The animal companions are made to suffer.
It's true. So wait. The flying animal companion dies, but the whale endures. I thought the whale died too.
Yeah, but sky swim is just a spell you can put on any animal.
Oh, that's true.
That can swim.
Well, my favorite part is that people are animals too, and I've watched you sky swim as a player character.
Well, that's because I have a swim speed. You do need a swim speed for sky swim.
That's true. Now, what do you think? If you had to rank this class out of 10, what would you give it?
I'd give it a solid 8. I think it does the healing stuff that you would expect a divine, even though they're not actually only divine, spellcaster to do, with enough stuff that you could have two or three in a party and you could be doing different things, even if you were both on the healing side of it. Is it likely that if you're the same connection, you're going to be doing drastically different things? No, which is where I kind of drop it a little bit. But in general, they're going to be different enough that they're not stepping on each other's toes. They'll find other things to do, hopefully.
Yeah. I'm always apprehensive about playing spellcasters because they are so reliant on saving throws, and it does not feel good for your primary thing to just not work all the time on, like, the big end game bosses. Like, In this edition, if you're fighting something that's like two levels or more higher than you, the game kind of assumes that you're just wailing on it with hit point damage rather than using cool saving throw spells. And that's fine. It's not my favorite thing in the world. It feels like you can make a bad choice as a player without knowing things that are like how the game system works, right? And that's not a mistake that I have made, but I'm also a game designer. I'm just thinking about like friends that I have who would be like, wow, I want to take this spell that turns the boss into a toad. And then it's like, mathematically, that will never happen. You can turn one of his little mooks into a toad, but that doesn't feel like you mattered. But I also get not wanting to like instantly end the combat. So I think it's a hard line to cross. I think that this class is cool. I like that it doesn't have a curse mechanic like the Oracle that makes me not want to play it. It turns out that adding friction to my character tends to make it just like, oh, why would I play this when I could play something that doesn't have friction, like a witch or a mystic? And I would say that this class feels like a witch without a familiar, and I think that's fine. I don't know if you've had a chance to see the witch in action in this edition, James. It's really
Oh,
cool.
I have not.
They are the best at the familiar mechanic rules. It's very fun. You get to have a very weird magical guy.
Oh.
He's not an animal companion, but he's a magical guy.
Oh, like a summoner.
He can't fight, but he's a magical guy.
Just a magical guy. That's just magic, Ted.
Well, that's yeah, right. Well, that's actually interesting that you bring up the summoner. The new Gen Con release for Pathfinder 2nd Edition is Impossible Magic, which is a very interesting book on Paizo's part, because if you looked at the book's recipe, it's about half remastered Secrets of Magic. Secrets of Magic was an old 2nd Edition Pathfinder book that introduced the Magus and the Summoner to the game. And so it's got an update on a lot of the stuff in that book that needs updating, but there's also apparently a lot of new content in this book too. They're introducing two new classes. They are the Necromancer and the Runesmith, I believe. And I've heard rumors that the Magus, I definitely the Magus, and maybe the Summoner got a remaster in this book. So hey, who knows? Maybe the Summoner's Eidolon will be a little bit cooler in that book. But Summoners kind of have a big uphill battle to climb because they basically have to use an action to command their Eidolon. So they lose an action doing that, but they're essentially characters with five actions per turn instead of three. So like it's inherently a very powerful class. Yeah. But so the next book for Paizo is not a big rule book though.
No, what is it?
It is Absalom, Center of the Universe. It is a campaign setting book that is being released at Gen Con this year. It is the
Ooh.
big book that talks all about the Absalom Station, which is, I think it's going to be a very helpful book, especially going into the new I guess season of stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, my players would like it a lot for Tales from the Vast.
Yeah, definitely. Because I mean, so much stuff like
Percolates
starts and
from there.
ends. Yeah, like I'm thinking even when we did Dead Sons, and like that's kind of where like it started, right? The other thing that's interesting to note is that the Gen Con is going to premiere the next season of Starfinder Society, right? So that typically happens every year. This season is called Beyond the Blood Door. And as a quick overview of like what this is about, the intro blurb on Paizo's blog says Absalom Station is the heart of the Pact Worlds, a hub of culture and commerce, a safe harbor in a dangerous universe. Among its most identifiable landmarks is the Lore Spire Complex, base of operations for the Starfinder Society. Absalom Station's peace of prosperity is shattered when a mysterious transmission is seen across every screen on Absalom Station. An aged dwarven man with an eye patch bellowing something rendered incomprehensible by glitching audio and garbled interference. Moments later, large spheres of rolling magical energy appear across Absalom Station, each raining blood on their surroundings. Where blood lands, monsters are spawned, which violently turn on the populace. Absalom Station is under attack, and it's up to you to battle blood-spawned beasts to put a stop to it. But as the dust settles and the blood drives, it's clear that this strange attack was part of something greater. Someone wants to make Absalom Station bleed. And this is introducing at Gen Con 2026 with Starfinder Society Scenario 2-01, the first cut. by Matt Duvall.
That does sound cool.
Yeah. And the other thing we've seen is you'll see a few new additions to the campaign, including new boons in our boon store, a generic adventure sanctioning document, which will allow players to gain XP for their Starfinder Society characters while playing longer Starfinder adventures. So hopefully we'll hear more about this soon. Usually there's like a, what's it called? Like a not like campaign setting guide, but like, yeah, a season primer. So I would imagine we'll probably get the primer either this week or next week, just based on the time frame that they traditionally do. Mm-hmm. But this is exciting. The art is pretty cool for this scenario. It shows like a bunch of these blood monsters roaming through the streets, charging at a bunch of Starfinders. I think one of them is Najiri, the Bleachling Gnome.
Oh.
Yeah. So... like, at least that's what it looks like to me, just at a glance, remembering that character's brief when we used to play back in first edition.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited. I am going to Gen Con this year, and I'm going with my partner, Dustin, and we are going to play a bunch of the new Starfinder stuff. So I am excited to let you know what it's like when I get back from the con in next month in August.
Yeah. We'll have a good show after that.
Yeah, it'll be great. I'm hoping we get some big announcements. I'm hoping we get some more info. Obviously, we're going to have to find time to review the new Absalom book. So we're going to have a big show on our hands. It might be a couple months before we can get back and do another class review.
Yeah, but you know, eventually they'll be done.
Yeah. Eventually. And then, you know, by the time that rolls around, we'll have Tech Core and we'll get two more classes.
Yay!
But yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Dustin and I made two characters. Dustin is playing what is he playing? I think he's playing a Mystic. No, he's playing an Operative. Dustin is playing an Operative and I am playing an Envoy. So that should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to getting to use that lead by example. I have not gotten to play as much second edition Starfinder as I'd like. So this is going to be my first, like, yeah, let's deep dive into it.
Yeah, very excited. Let's get stuck in.
That's right. What's going on with you, James?
I am going to be running Tales from the Vast starting on Saturday. So,
you know what? Mm-hmm. So you're starting with a level one adventure, the one on the boat that we talked about?
Mm-hmm.
Or the one into Kazog's Absurdity, right?
Yep.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Any of your players know the greatness that they're in for?
Oh, I mean, they're all excited, but you know, they are excited to be playing a role-playing game.
That's fair.
In a setting that is not grimdark, so they're gonna have a good time. We have fun.
Are they used to grimdark settings?
Well, I mean, that's kind of most common when you get around sci-fi.
That's true. You get a lot of like 40K and stuff.
40K.
You know?
I mean, Charge Crusade isn't super far. Isn't far forward, but like even stuff like Halo is kind of grimdark at some points. Like, it's about the extinction of a species.
Yeah. Now, this is the group that you did all like the intro level scenarios with, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you did Cosmic Birthday and whatnot with
some playtests. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How has that been going for you so far? Tell us a bit about your games.
Oh, I mean, they've been going fine. We've been learning a lot. One of the players actually was invited to other games of Pathfinder Second Edition and was delighted that she had a grasp on some of the rules ahead of time.
So yeah, because the two systems, that's one of the nice things about the system. If you play a lot of one, you can kind of bounce to the other without much of a problem. Mm-hmm. The only real difference that I've seen is that Starfinder is a lot more generous with dark vision and with flying than Pathfinder is.
Yeah, which, you know, makes sense. Future.
I love it.
You know, in general, it's the kind of similar thing of, well, can I do more computer checks? And it's like, probably. Oh, I'll try it.
Has there been any like really outstandingly cool moments in like any of your games with this one? Like any war stories of someone doing something amazing?
Oh no, they're all psychopaths. So none of it is like podcast safe for work stuff. They're not like miscreants. They're just like dumb. Advanced dumb, which is fine. They were trying to get into a bank vault and decided to shoot at the civilian person, sort of, and pin, this is back before they took away the pinning from crossbolters, and just pinned them to the floor and walked away. And I never let them live that down.
You shouldn't.
Do you
let them live it down? So you don't let them live it down IRL or in the game too?
Wherever I can make a reference to somebody just stigmating somebody to the floor.
I kind of love that. Most of the tabletop gaming I've been doing recently is 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. So it'll be nice to go and get some nice, good, crunchy gameplay going in with Starfinder.
Yeah, I'm trying to convince them to do more magic classes because on the whole, in general, they're kind of scared of the magic. And it's like, just do it. It's fine.
Yeah. Tell them to take an archetype. Honestly, in Dustin's Pathfinder 2nd edition game, I have a rogue with a couple of spellcasting archetypes. Mm-hmm. And honestly, just having a couple of cantrips to hit different types of weaknesses is really helpful.
Yeah, they're not super worried about archetypes. I think one or two of them might be doing them, and I've, you know, offered them. But, you know, they want to go with less bookkeeping, and that's fair.
That's fair. That reminds our conversations about you and tracking gold. Sometimes more, but less bookkeeping is more.
Yeah, I mean, also, I play abominations of characters, so I...
Yes.
I try to limit how much I can mess up a character sheet.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, I think this sounds like a pretty good place to end our conversation. I guess, what do you think about the Mystic? Do you think that this is like an 8 out of 10? What are your favorite parts about the class? Or what are some things that you would like to see more content expanded on going into future products? You should let us know by going to nodirectionpodcast.com and clicking on our Discord link. There you can post all sorts of different things, either to me or James directly, or even to like Paizo people. Like, Brian likes to talk about it on Beyond, but our No Direction team is really quite... we have quite the history of people moving on and up in the tabletop RPG world, whether you're talking about people like Jason Keeley, who currently works as one of like the major developers for Pathfinder, Ron Lundeen, who's now with, and Vanessa Hoskins, who are now with Wizards of the Coast doing stuff. Amanda Hammond, who's with Wizards of the Coast doing Dungeons and Dragons stuff, was with us. Dustin Knight is now Starfinder's lead designer, or I don't know if it's just designer or lead designer. He's the lead of my heart, so it's fine. So there's like lots of good conversation. You can ask people stuff, strike up a conversation. We're always happy to have people. What do you think, James? Do you have any shout outs or things that you want to do?
No.
Cool. So then until next time, when I come back from Gen Con and we're ready to talk about Gen Con secrets, you should all go beyond with No Direction.